morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for February 10th, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You know what I really like? I really like testing out beta-level software.
That's a great thing to do. That's a great thing. Because especially if it doesn't work, you can just always say, well, it's just the beta.
It's just the beta, and we're just going to move on, and we're going to use our Google Hangouts because we're not together in the same place for the first time for our show today. I'm in a hotel room, which is why I've got this lovely art behind me for those of you who are watching on video. Those of you on radio, you can imagine. It's a beautiful piece of art. Chip, you're in your Barbie dream house.
I am in my Barbie dream house, and Steve doesn't like me because I don't shower, and if I would start showering, he said we could record again together.
Yeah, we're at the greatest place on earth right now, a hotel room, and we're living on hotel Wi-Fi. We'll see how this works out. We also have a special guest this week. Chip, you want to introduce Mark?
Mark is a good friend of mine. I met him a long time ago when we were in school. He's a writer. He runs a website if you're interested in commentary on comics and analysis of what's currently being printed or what's printed in the past. It's called Dork 40. He also has another site where he puts his more original works, and it's called Reports from the Field. So if you're interested in reading some interesting short stories and things of that nature, it's a good place to check them out. My friend is Mark Brett.
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So, you're in South Carolina, is that right?
North Carolina.
Oh, that's like South Carolina, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. More and more like South Carolina, in fact.
There is no South Carolina, is there?
No, there is. There is.
Oh, there's a South Carolina? Yep, there's just no Carolina? Is that the one? What's the one where there's a west and then not an east? That's Virginia.
Right. West Virginia and Virginia.
I don't even understand this. We're in eastern North Carolina, which many people do think is a different Carolina altogether.
And it is. We're backwards and proud of it. Yes.
That's right. We're a little. It's part of the Tidewater, but not quite part of the Tidewater. So there's a different. It's different from the Appalachian area. So it's eastern North Carolina has its own flavor.
So, Chip, you're from North Carolina, and we're talking about eastern North Carolina. This is getting very confusing.
Well, eastern North Carolina is probably known best for its pork barbecue sauce. There's a special way that we make barbecue down there. Eastern North Carolina is a... When Raleigh and Charlotte and the main part of the Piedmont of the state expanded... Eastern North Carolina was still agriculture. It's still growing. In fact, growing up in Greenville, we would go over to where they sold the tobacco and smell this beautiful smell. So I don't smoke. I don't encourage anyone to smoke. But they told us it was a vegetable, and it smells really good when it comes out of when they pick it and they dry it. Oh, it's just so awesome.
So, Mark, you're an expert on comics. Is that true?
I suppose I've been reading them before I could read, since I was about 4 or 5 years old. So I suppose if that makes me an expert, then I'm an expert.
Okay. And what's your expertise on movies? Are you a movie watcher?
I am, yes. Not as deep into movies as I am into comics and, comics, really.
comics. So that brings us to our first segment, Mark. We're going to go into our film at 11. And this week, Chip, you watched a whole bunch of movies. You've been a busy little beaver watching movies. You watched Happy Valley is the first one that you put on the list. Tell me about Happy Valley.
Well, if you are a sports fan, one of the shocking
As
developments...
As you know, I'm a huge sports fan.
You love sports. You can't get enough. One of the sad stories that happened a few years ago was at Penn State University, where Sandusky, which was an assistant coach to Joe Paterno, who was the very similar to what Dean Smith was to North Carolina in UNC basketball, Joe Paterno was to Pennsylvania and to college football and what he was able to build at this university. And there was a scandal where there were kids that were basically Sandusky, Paterno's assistant coach, had multiple accusations where he was having child sex with these boys. He had set up a foundation for them. It was a huge scandal. In fact, they had talked about kicking Penn State out of the Big Ten at the time. They had talked about shutting down the athletic program for this school. This is a big school. And this movie addresses all the stories that were going along. Was Joe Paterno aware of this? Was the university aware of what was going on with Sandusky and these children? What they sort of missed out on this movie is there was a reporter that tried to uncover this years before, and he had wound up dead somewhere, and that was not addressed in this movie. And there was also potentially the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania was aware of this, and that wasn't addressed at all. But this is a sad story. There's a lot of angles on this. Paterno, as soon as he was fired as a coach, which was 3 days before their big game against Nebraska, that Saturday he had found out Paterno had cancer. He passed away shortly after this. His children are trying to clear his father's name. Sandusky during this time was tried and convicted. He's in jail for life. It addresses so many things. The athletics and universities, you know, their role, the fandom on, you know, how they defend things that may not be true. Was a coach treated unfairly on this? I think it was very balanced in bringing this story out. And if you don't know a lot about it, which I did read a lot about this as it was developing, I think this would be a great movie to kind of learn about something that you basically are going to leave this movie asking the role of athletics, amateur athletics, and college athletics in our society, and whether that's good or bad. There are so many. I love college football. But I really do think that this is an interesting movie addressing some of that situation and what's going on, the response to it.
How about you, Brett? Do you follow a lot of sports? Do you know anything about sports?
Very little. I followed this story because I found it fascinating. I didn't know the reporter who died. Now, he died under mysterious circumstances, or?
Mysterious circumstances, my friend.
Interesting.
Was there organ music? Dun, dun, dun.
We've got things that I also could mention that are not on this podcast, off the air, but there are some relations. Well, anyway, I won't mention them, but let's just say that this story has a lot of depth and a lot of onion layers to it. And like I said, I don't think that you're going to leave this movie going, oh, I'm super clean on this. There's a gentleman who uncovers for a pedophile the criteria that you're looking for, and I promise you, it's the everyday person. It's not the person that you would think is the pedophile, and I think that's probably the most jarring part of this is it could be anyone.
That's terrible.
And you're a teacher. Steve, mm-hmm. During your mild-mannered day job. And one of the real challenges with you is that you're dealing with children all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there was conversations to make sure you have them in the hallway and multiple people are around. And just, I mean, you can think about all these types of things that you're immediately thinking about, which...
And we're always on guard for that because all it takes is an accusation. You don't actually have to be a pedophile of any kind. Any kind of accusation is could be career-ending in the education field. So you absolutely have to be on guard all the time, making absolutely sure that you are being very careful, not saying anything that could possibly offend anybody in any way, and still teaching these kids the things that they need to know for their lives.
And Jerry Sandusky, who was in line to take over as the football coach when Paterno retired, was told he was not going to be the coach. But he was everything that you could... He was a monster that you didn't know was a monster. Mm-hmm. He had set up a Second Mile group. His son eventually came out and... I'm sorry, his adopted son, and testified against him, which was one of the nails in the coffin for him. I mean, it just gets dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. And the question between what's legal and what's a moral argument also comes into play, that Paterno may have done what was legally right, but did he do what was morally right? And we're talking about a guy that, growing up in North Carolina, it would be, Dean Smith. Something like that happened to him. We thought so highly of him. We couldn't imagine that Joe Paterno would be part of something. And Joe Paterno was not a pedophile. Joe Paterno turned, the rule is he turned in the information to his superiors, but did he do enough? And the sad part about it is this is going to follow Penn State for as long as they have athletics.
Very interesting that they called the movie Happy Valley. That's pretty telling.
That's the name where the university is located, Happy Valley, Pennsylvania.
I know a lot about sports, Mark. Moving on to our second movie that Chip watched this week. Chip, you finally got a chance to see Boyhood. We talked about Boyhood weeks ago when it was first released. That's an amazing idea of a film where they took this boy's life and filmed it a few days every year for, 12 years?
Sure.
And made a stunning movie, and you finally got a chance to watch it. So tell me your impressions.
This was a very good movie. It was very interesting. What I should say is many people are saying, well, it's the best film of the year. I don't think it was the best film of the year.
It is nominated, right, for Movie of the Year?
I think it is. Mm-hmm. I think it is. But it is fascinating. One, you get to see how the body changes over this period of time that they're recording this film.
And not only the boy, but you mentioned the mother and the father had lots of growing in that 12 years. The very interesting idea of having these same actors film for these 12 years.
Exactly. Their bodies changed dramatically. The mother ended up getting her degree and getting her master's degree and was teaching at a university. The father went from basically looking for himself to finding a job, remarrying, having another child. So there's all sorts of changes that are happening with the characters in this movie. Being a parent myself, I got to see the growth that parents have, and that they never really have perfect information. As individuals, we do the best we can. We make decisions. We're not the wisest people making decisions, but as we get older, we have more experiences, and we become more forgiving, more loving. We just start accepting things as opposed to working off these ideals that may or may not be something that can happen. That's reasonable to expectation.
And that was Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke as the mother and the father. So that's even better. Those are real good actors. And was it a stunning Oscar-worthy kind of performance?
I don't think it was. I do think it was interesting, and that's. I think the concept is very interesting. I think the dialogue is very interesting, but I don't think this was the sweeping life-changing story that we are all going for. What we're looking for in this film is the change that they go through, the arc they go through, and we're getting photographs of a picture of time. We're getting sort of this happened during this year. And there's a scene with with Dad and the son, and Dad has just sold his hot rod that he's had for many years, and the son is upset about it, and he says, "Well, why are you upset that I sold this vehicle? I had to buy a minivan because I've got my new baby back here," and he turns to him and says, "Well, you promised that car to me when I turned 16, and Dad, that's think about the conversations you have with your children, and maybe you're promising something that you ultimately may not be able to fulfill. And Ethan Hawke's character, the dad, basically had to have a conversation. He may have been wrong. He said, but, you know, this was my car. I had to do what was best for our family. And, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disappoint you on this. And, you know, I had to make a decision. So dad is not, you know, he's not shirking the responsibility of a promise he made. But then again, he's being very diplomatic. And the boy has to, he has to come to terms that, yeah, I could buy a car when I get older, but just because, you know, we had a conversation when I was in third grade doesn't mean that, you know, it's locked in truth, that this has to happen. And those are the type of conversations we get throughout this entire film.
What do you think, Mark? What are your thoughts on the Oscar list? There's a list of best pictures. Boyhood is, by the way, on that list of Best Picture nominees, along with American Sniper that we talked about last week, Birdman, which we still haven't seen, but we really want to.
That's fantastic. Sorry, go ahead. That's right.
No, you go ahead, Mark.
Only one of the Oscar nominees I have actually seen. Phenomenal film. Michael Keaton is great in it. The entire cast is fantastic. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it. I don't know how far you guys go on spoilers.
Well, it depends on if Chips had a lot of coffee at the French restaurant or not. But I can edit those parts out.
Well, one thing I'll say about Birdman, the camera is as much a character in that film as any of the actors. It never stops moving. There are shots that, although in fact, the entire film almost looks like a single continuous shot. It's all trickery, of course. They didn't actually do that. Mm-hmm. But it never stops moving, and it's always flying.
Wow.
Yeah. Beautiful film.
It becomes a question of what is an Oscar film? Is it the film that does the greatest thing with the technology, the new idea in filmmaking, or is it the greatest acting? And that's a debate that's been raging since the beginning of the awards for movies. And some of those technological advancements are fantastic. We watched the Big Hero 6 movie last night, finally, and the advancements in the technology in that film are stunning. They used a 55,000 core CPU to generate that film, and the visual existence of that film is fantastic. Is the story great? It's fine. The story's fine, but the technology, like in the Birdman movie, it's certainly stunning. And we get into a debate of whether it's the acting and the story, or if it's the technology that should be awarded each year in those awards.
And if it gets mixed up, of course, we get the Star Wars prequels.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. There are Star Wars prequels? Are you referring to a cartoon show on the Cartoon Network? Because I've seen those. Those are quite good.
Steve does not acknowledge the prequels at all.
There are three Star Wars movies. We move on to let's see, what's opening this week? It's Valentine's Day weekend, so it's time to take your loved one to a movie, to, you know, get the kids a sitter and go watch a movie. We've got a couple of great movies coming out this weekend. The first one, of course, is the highly anticipated movie version of the book, 50 Shades of Grey. That one's out there for lovers.
Oh, yeah. Are they called lovers at this point? they're playthings with each other at this point.
Chip, have you read The 50 Shades of Grey?
I have not.
Okay,
I have
good.
Not. But,
Mark,
but
have
I
you
know
read The
many
50
moms,
Shades of Grey?
But I know many moms who have.
That's right. This is one of those books that is made for moms, for suburban moms to read and be surprised by all of the strange things in the world. In fact, you put in the show notes a Saturday Night Live sketch that highlights that. That's a great way to look at it. What I wanted to share with you is something called The Diamond Club, which is a book written by an author named Patricia Harkins Bradley, who doesn't exist. This was a book written by a group, a podcast group, who decided they wanted to make a book like 50 Shades of Grey without all of the, you know, writing part. And they got all of their listeners to write a paragraph in the book 50 Shades of Grey style, and they published it, and they hit the top 5 in the Amazon ratings.
Wow.
That is, all right, so 50 Shades of Grey is definitely about lovemaking with a special type of twist, right?
Mm-hmm. That's so, what I'm told.
So the that's right. So the diamond is very similar, where the I guess all the authors are required to write a single paragraph mm-hmm. and make it as steamy as they possibly can.
And the ratings are great on Amazon. If you go to Amazon, I'll put it in the show notes. If you go to Amazon, you can see that some people really liked this book. It was written in a way, some of us are very good writers, especially if we write a paragraph. And we could put together a story, loosely, a story that makes sense for people to buy this book for 99 cents. They put it on Amazon for 99 cents, and they sold quite a few copies of it and made some good money.
And I never thought this could happen to me.
So, Mark, you're yes. famous for writing in some fashion, so what do you think? Can we put together a book? Can we write it together and make enough money to support
love,
the podcast?
Lerv, my friend.
I would put together a book that people would pay 99 cents for, sure, yes. But people are really not demanding when you're only paying a buck. So.
Now, we need some music in the background when we write this music. You know, the chicka 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 bum
bum. That's where we're at in society right now. 99 cents will buy you a lot, and we are all willing to pay our 99 cents for a lot of garbage.
Well, we're willing to take chances for 99 cents. And in fact, there's a good point there on the challenge with Android versus with iOS, the Apple version. People are willing to pay more money for apps through the Apple Store than they are through Android. In fact, many of them work just on free apps. And there's a distinction there that, you know, I can't truly articulate. So when we go to Amazon, who just went through a huge negotiation with one of the publishers and basically trying to convince the publisher that they are the publisher is competing with other forms of entertainment and that they need to be conscious of how much it costs to print a book and sell a book, and whether the book should sell for $20 or $10 or $5 or 99 cents. They've got to be very conscious of that, because people's time is or their entertainment dollars, they're competing with bowling or watching a movie or any other type thing you could pick.
That's true. The other movie that's coming out this week is Kingsman: The Secret Service. This one is based on a comic book, so we finally get Mark in on this conversation. Mark, tell us all about Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Well, the comic, which I just read yesterday, is Mark Miller and Dave Gibbons. It's a lot of fun. It's about a kid growing up poor in London whose uncle is a super spy who gets him into the spy school. It's about his development as a spy, and in the background there's a massive plot to kill, I think it's... 4/5 of the world's population going on, and that's what explodes, of course, in the final issue.
Okay, so is it the Harry Potter of Secret Service stories then?
Oh, definitely not. Okay. The guy's about 17. There are lots of swear words, words that we're not supposed to say on the podcast. So, one of the aspects of their training is seduction, and we will teach you how to make a woman orgasm every time, I believe is the line they give it.
That sounds like the other movie we're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah.
So now we know why it's coming out for Valentine's Day. Take your sweetie to come see The Secret Service.
We should mention that Mark Miller is the author of Kick-Ass. And there was two movies based off the books that he wrote, the comics that he wrote. And I'm assuming that means that all Mark Miller's products are going to be eventually made into to movies because Kick-Ass did pretty well, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it obviously did well enough to do a sequel. That's good enough.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, this is Secret Service obviously written to be made into a film. It's quite obvious. This is a very commercial effort from Miller. Which is fine. He's good at that. So.
And Dave Gibbons,
Picasso of comics, then.
Dave Gibbons, the author of this, was also the author. The artist of this was the artist of Watchmen, which was probably the most awarded comic in history, I would assume.
I would say so, yeah.
All right. So those are our two movies to go to this weekend for Valentine's Day. The movie draft is almost over. This is the second to last week for the movie draft, so we're wrapping that up, and it looks like Chip and I really did not win the movie draft, which is fine.
What?
Yeah.
Which movie is top now?
The top movie for the winter... Do you want to get... Mark... Do you want to guess what the top movie for the winter was? Can you remember?
I have no clue. I'm sorry.
That would be The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, which brought in so far $335 million. So the participant who got that one won the movie draft without any question, because that was the top movie, $335 million. As a result, she has $474 million with her three movies, and Chip, you've got $178 million, and I've got $109 million. So
my rule is never to go with the art house movies. They don't do well.
They don't do well. Even those Oscar contenders, Birdman and Selma and The Imitation Game, did not make the money that the action shooting arrows at people and crying movies did. Brings us to our app of the week, and this week we're going to get back into Sling TV, which is finally released this week, and it's a great new offering to try to get us off of the cable and try to get us to an all-internet kind of lifestyle, kind of like what I live.
Well, it's owned by DirecTV, Dish TV. Dish. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's owned by Dish. It is totally aimed at millennials, who would never have cable television or any type of DirecTV satellite type of television. And it works on one device. So if you put it on your tablet, it only works on the tablet. I think it's $20 a month. I noticed that it's by invitation only. So you have to go and put your email address in there, and eventually they will send you the opportunity to purchase their service. And there was the reason why I picked it is because this morning, on Sunday morning, there was a review of the service. There was a person over at AppleInsider.com, Sam Oliver, did a review of the service, and he talks a little bit about the good parts about it, how the interaction is to get through the television stations, and that's a big deal. If you have a Roku or you have an Apple TV or a Fire Stick or one of the other services, you recognize how important this interaction of getting to the different services is. And I think he enjoyed it. I think he got a favorable review for it. And on Sling TV, you get ESPN, ESPN2, which is the big sale. It's the first chance of getting sports programming on that level through this type of services. Most, if you had a Roku or an Apple TV and you didn't have a cable provider, they were not allowing you to have that. Although Apple has it's opening again, trying to get ESPN to come through the Apple TV, which would be a big coup for them.
Mark, do you have any Rokus or Apple TVs or Amazon Fire devices in your house?
No. I've got a cable connecting my desktop computer to my television, and that's where I get most of my TV these days. So.
Okay, so do you have a cable provider at all?
Yes, well, I get a provider for my internet, actually. I've cut the cable on TV.
Okay, so is this a service that would appeal to you, seeing as you probably agree with me that sports are so very important in our lifestyle?
Probably not. You know, I'm happy with the deal I've got. I love having my desktop computer hooked up to my television. It's I'm happy with that. I'm not really in the market for a Roku or anything like that.
You have all the access to all the programming that you want through that.
Exactly.
All right. And Chip, you still have cable. You're still on the AT&T U-verse, and you're still enjoying that.
I do. In fact, I had a conversation last night with a daddy-daughter, I'm sorry, on Saturday night, on the daddy-daughter dance, about a person comparing the cable service to U-verse to DirecTV, and interestingly enough, why do I know enough about this to be able to truly compare them? I think the real question we're going to come to, and I think many young people, and there are plenty of cord cutters have come to, is why are we going to pay for these services? What we're seeing right now is where ESPN owns such a large body of sports programming that if you are interested in sports programming, which many young men are, which is the group of advertisers that people are trying to advertise to, are we willing to spend significant dollars? Think about what if my if you have cable internet service, that could be $70 a month. Throw in cable television, you're looking $60-$70 on top of that. That's a lot of money. And people are saying, well, is this service that, interesting enough, is supposed to be advertiser run, willing to put those costs on top of the individuals, because we have all these services to pass through the advertising. To pass by the advertising and not see them. And with a service like Hulu, or which allows you to watch current television programs, or Netflix, or Amazon Prime, you know, is it really? I mean, are you willing to pay? What are we looking at? $1,000 a year to watch television? That seems like a lot of money.
It does, and that's why I am a cord cutter. I don't have cable. I've never really been a big fan of cable. I've had it off and on in my lifetime, but I've never really found value in that. $100 a month for this programming doesn't do anything for me, probably because of the sports. And this Sling TV is the first attempt at getting sports off of the cable. This is the first time that the internet is going to have access to those sporting events, and that's a huge market. There are a lot of people that are like Chip and not like Mark and me and like to watch sports.
Well, I think that what we may see is that this is a year where we start seeing content kind of cut from us. We're already seeing that there are some writers for magazines and stuff like that who are not willing to blog now. They're going to try to control their content. If we recognize that many music artists' videos have been moved to Vevo which runs through YouTube, mm-hmm. what the idea is to be able to control their access to their music and things of that nature. Are we going to have are they going to be able to make money off of their art or their services versus what we've become very accustomed to, being able to get a lot of content for no price at all? And I don't know if we are willing to do it. Young people, Sling Television is the first attempt to see if young people are willing to do that.
And I guess time will tell on that one. Brings us to our Book It of the Week. And this is, Mark, this is why you're here, is to talk about our Book of the Week. We've decided that we need to talk about the Marvel Man and Miracle Man comic books. And you are the comic book expert, so why don't you start? Tell us all about Marvel Man and Miracle Man.
Well, all right. This is sort of the book that made Alan Moore's career, Alan Moore being the author of Watchmen, From Hell, a number of other projects that people probably heard of from the films that have been based on them. Marvel Man was his first big break in England. It ran in a comic called Warrior. It was picked up in the U.S. in the 80s by Eclipse Comics. Made a legendary run there. And then disappeared once Eclipse itself dissolved as a company. There's been legal battles over the characters for years. But I'm not telling you about the story itself. The story itself is about It's sort of a what if Captain Marvel, Shazam, as he is now known. What if Shazam existed in the real world? What if a guy woke up one day, realized that he could turn into this super being, and how would that change the world around him? Is that a fair assessment, Chip?
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that this was Alan Moore's sort of looking at old comics from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and bringing them to a modern, more sophisticated audience was what he was attempting to do. He was a young writer at this time, and the comic was originally came out in a little serial, Inside Warrior, black and white. Eventually, was packaged together for the American audience after he became a noted writer for Swamp Thing. I think that V for Vendetta and Watchmen were being released at the same time.
More or less.
Okay. So this was a big deal for a small company, for Eclipse to come in. Because Eclipse Comics went out of business and the rights were sold off kind of willy-nilly, Neil Gaiman, which is an artist that you may know, you may have read many of his short stories. He's the one to help put together the package that ultimately allowed Marvel to buy this character and reprint these books that have been out of print for many, many years with new coloring, and they're pretty books. Mm-hmm. The reason why we're on today is because the issue number 15. Was released last week, and number 15 is a gory, horrific story that led to a lot of changes in comics. Grisly, gory stories, people brooding, very violent. There was a whole change of the industry that Alan Moore eventually had a conversation that he didn't necessarily think was a good thing to happen. So my hope is that we can talk a little bit about the story, the build-up to it, and then talk a little bit about how it's sort of showing its way into many movies that are coming out today. Alan Moore has a huge influence on a lot of pop culture today, and he is a very imposing guy with a great big beard and fancy jewelry on his fingers. Very interesting guy.
So you put the list of the Alan Moore stories that have been made into movies. You mentioned V for Vendetta. The Watchmen was an Alan Moore. From Hell, I don't believe that's been a movie.
It has.
It has.
It was loosely based on his story, and they're actually in development for a series on television based on his. And that was a reimagining of the Jack the Ripper story.
Okay, so maybe you have talked about that. I recall that at some point, listening to that. And the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was recently made into a movie, too.
why don't we go ahead and say that Alan Moore doesn't claim any of these and asked his name to be taken off of all of them?
Really?
Well, not all of them. Just Watchmen and V for Vendetta. Those are the two he got screwed over on the right side. Extraordinary Gentlemen, he made those deals himself. He took the money happily. He bought himself a big old house, and he's fine with those.
So League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he actually claims as a movie? Because that movie was really bad, and it was not really related to anything on his writing.
Oh, yeah. Well, what he says, people have asked him about that film, and he says, you know, does that film lessen your work? And he pointed to his bookshelf and said, no, my work is sitting right there. I can open it up and read it anytime I want. I don't really care about it.
For Miracle Man reprints, Alan Moore has asked his name to be taken off, and he's known as, I'm going to do the quotes, original writer. So he basically has disowned this and given it to the artist.
Yes. As he did with all his profits from Watchmen and V for Vendetta, all the profits he was due for those films, he gave to the artist as well. Moving back to Miracle Man. I'm not sure what Moore's personal opinion is on those stories now. I think he feels like they brought about a horrible change in superhero comics, something he did not intend at the time. He wasn't even thinking about the influence of them. He was just a young writer trying to tell a story he wanted to tell, and he looks back on it now and feels regret, I think.
Well, the story builds upon... all right, so we have our Captain Marvel character, and then there's young Captain Marvel, and then there's the kid Captain Marvel. And I'm using these because maybe people can understand a little bit more. The young Captain Marvel character never changed back when. All right, so these characters were lost back in the '60s, and they reemerged in the 1980s with memories. Captain Marvel character basically becomes a very evil, bad person. He abuses his power, is ultimately when we kind of come out of this. In issue 15, they come to this massive fight where Captain Marvel and Kid Captain Marvel are going to battle each other, and they destroy London. And they don't just destroy London a little bit. They inflict just true destruction. Think of the worst battle in World War II, and what they just, you know, how, you know, maybe the Germans and the Russians they fought over this one town, and they just, you know, millions of people were dying. We're talking about London being destroyed, people being tortured in it. This is going on at super fast speed because these are powerful characters, and sort of the impact of it. And we can give the ending away because it comes to play in it. But ultimately, at the end of it, we get the Captain Marvel character has to kill the Kid Marvel character. And it is just a brutal scene. In fact, I sent you a copy of the story, Steve. Mm-hmm. And if you look through it, I think you could see that if superheroes existed in the real world, when they battle, the destruction would be incredible.
Kind of like what we saw in the Avengers movie, where the huge battle at the end of the Avengers movie destroys New York City, and then what Marvel interestingly did was make that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show that happens right after the events of that Marvel movie, and that's part of the discussion, is the billions of dollars of cleanup, and who is responsible for this cleanup? Are the superheroes themselves responsible for this cost, or did they save the world and somebody else is responsible for the cost? And if that's somebody else, who? Who is responsible for this?
Team America, when they destroyed Paris. There's a good example of what you can thank us now. Now, right. I think you hit on part of it. The difference between the Avengers film and the Miracle Man story is that the Avengers film, there's no blood. There's no one being tortured. Here we've got people running around with their arms being, you know, taken off. We've got people who have been pulled out of their skin. There's a part of the story where Alan Moore is talking as this Captain Marvel character, and he goes, "I'd like to tell you that there were no people in the car that I picked up to smash into Kid Magic Markle, but you know, I would be lying." There, it is just absolute horror. I use the word horror, but I don't know if I'm truly articulating what was really going on around them. And the people who had survived that, if you think about it in a sort of a real-world case, how would your mind wrap around it? The post-traumatic stress would have been incredible for the people who were just bystanders.
Yeah, definitely. There's that two-page spread of London after everything's done, and there's the horrible, horrible things that Bates, the Kid Marvel man, the Kid Captain Marvel character, has done. He's put heads on pikes, and he's hung skins from clotheslines. He's been there hours torturing people before the heroes even get there. And there's a two-page spread that's just, it's like something out of Hieronymus Bosch. It is devastating. I cannot even begin to imagine how anyone in the real world would respond to that level of destruction, because it's something we've never seen.
The touching part at the end is Captain Marvel. He is wounded with this incredible wound, and so he says the name, you know, Shazam, and turns back to the kid, and the kid is aware of what the kid Captain Marvel, his power is, and sort of how he's been twisted, and our Captain Marvel character, Miracle Man, is holding the kid and telling him everything's going to be okay. He's comforting him and saying, listen, this will never happen again. You don't have to worry about it. And the kid is just, he's so relieved that nothing's ever going to happen like this type of destruction again. But the solution to this was basically Captain Marvel smashes his head. He kills this young boy. And he starts crying because he recognizes that this child, he's the gateway to this evil source, but he's not evil himself. And this will eventually play out because when Neil Gaiman eventually takes over the story, there's going to be a way that this Captain Marvel, Kid Captain Marvel character will come back, and that's because anything will be possible in the afterworld. But this very story here, along with Watchmen, and there is a Batman story Alan Moore wrote called The Killing Joke, really changed the entire comics industry, where people became cruel. Superheroes were no longer heroes. They were these crazed people who were given this power, and we're starting to see some of it show up in movies right now. And it's important to kind of pinpoint where the pop culture seed came, and it came from this book right here, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think you're wrong at all. Man of Steel, I believe you mentioned when we were talking about this before the show. The destruction of Man of Steel is devastating as well. Nothing in comparison to this story because they didn't want to make an R-rated film. But yeah, no, that, I think Man of Steel definitely pulls on this. Post 9/11, you see a lot more of this mass destruction as well. And I think the Twin Towers, the two towers coming down, certainly is also a major influence on the pop culture superhero as well, level of destruction.
And going back to Mark Miller with Kick-Ass, that was the adult story. When I say it's a rated R comic type thing. The way they dealt with each other, the torturing, brutal way of killing that was going on in there, the direct descendant of that was probably the story also.
Sure.
What the Man of Steel, the ending of that movie was where Superman, a character that would never kill anybody, ultimately kills Zod, basically snaps his neck, which is very similar or reminiscent from this story. I mean, in fact, you could argue that it's the retelling of this same story, but 20 years later. That type of thing.
Wow. So we got some Valentine's movies, and then we got terrible comic books where small children are crushed to death. Thanks for joining us.
let me paint a happier picture on this. I think that Moore felt very guilty about this story because he thought it would be a good story to tell. But what his response to it was he wrote a series of books called 1963, which brought fun back into comics with the superhero group. And he also wrote a series that was sort of an homage to the old Superman stories that you can think back in the 50s and 60s called Supreme, where he took these characters and their light stories, very similar to Archie comics and stuff like that, and brought them into the current era. But he certainly, it was not going to be on this level of heaviness that this story, along with Watchmen and The Killing Joke, brought to the forefront of an industry. And like I said, the people who read those, many of them are the filmmakers today, and we're starting to see these stories showing up now.
good show. Even the next issue of Miracle Man, the Miracle Man character, Marvel Man character, brings about a utopia based on, in many ways, the comic book fantasies that the character is based on. So even there, even one issue later, Moore's already pulling back from crushing the child's head, destroying London, flaying people alive, things like that. So
there's still goodness in Alan Moore. And we can find joy, and we can put a Valentine on his desk for Valentine's Day, and we could be okay with Alan Moore.
All right, so let me give you a little Alan Moore, a little trivia right here. At some point, I don't know if it was the 80s, but he was married to his wife, and living with another lady at the same time. So there was
great.
Two
That's
women.
Very positive. Thanks,
a little 50 Shades of Grey there. his wife and the lady left him and divorced him to be together.
Because they had a lot in common, apparently.
No, I tell you, he is not... It's a shame that he doesn't travel to the U.S., because I would assume that with Letterman or with any of the late night, he'd be a great interview.
He's fantastic. He's on BBC quite a bit. On BBC Radio in particular, they put him on. He's always a great interview.
And you mentioned that Neil Gaiman is going to be working on the story too, and Neil Gaiman is such a dark writer. He writes such scary tales about childhood that this, I could see where he would be interested in writing this story.
Well, the Alan Moore story ended at 16. And I should mention, these were not published monthly. These stories were coming out maybe a year apart at some point. So you never knew when they were coming through. But Gaiman took over, and his three series arc was the Golden Age, the Silver Age, and I can't remember, the Dark Age or something.
Maybe the Bronze Age, I forget.
Okay. But he only got through part of his story. And he wanted to complete this. This is there's a grand idea of this story of what if they existed in the real world and how would it impact the world. After the destruction of London, they're creating a utopia. Eventually they decide that everyone should be able to have powers. And they figured out a way to do that. There's a lot of just interesting commentary on it. Gaiman's story will be eventually be completed, and this was when Gaiman was starting out, so it'll be interesting the weight the story actually gets in the media when he starts coming out with the part of his story, the new part of his story.
All right, there you go. We can look forward to the next piece of this story from Neil Gaiman. We can go to see the 50 Shades of Grey in the movie theater, and we can have a great Valentine's Day.
Yay!
What a positive show. Wow. Well, Chip, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
I think we can survive, only if we can come back next week.
We can come back next week. What do you think, Mark? Do you think we have enough information to survive another week?
I think that will get everybody through, yes.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasselblad.
And we'll see you in the future.